Hey, how many of you have ever watched big time wrestling on TV? You guys know what I'm talking about? Come on, who are a couple of the fans? Okay, a few. You don't want to admit it. Hey, I'm not a big time wrestling fan either, but when I do watch it, I love the tag team event. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where they wrestle in pairs, and so when the match begins, each team puts one wrestler in at a time, and they wrestle, but if they need to be relieved or they need some help, they could tag the other team member who could jump in the ring and finish for them. Do you know what I'm talking about? Bam! Okay. Tonight, Kate and I are not going to do tag team wrestling, thank the Lord. No, you don't want to see that. I'd get worked. But we are going to do a little tag team preaching. Boom. All right. As we listen to and respond to God's word found in Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 14, hear the word of the Lord. After these things, God tested Abraham. God said to him, Abraham. And Abraham said, Here I am. He said, Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I shall show you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him and his son Isaac. He cut the wood for the burnt offering, and he set out and went to the place in the distance that God had shown him. On the third day, Abraham looked up and he saw the place far away. Then Abraham said to his young men, Stay here with the donkey. The boy and I will go over there and we will worship and then we will come back to you. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the knife and the fire. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac said to his father, Abraham, Father. And he said to him, Here I am, son. He said, The fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. When they came to the place that God had shown him, Abraham built an altar there and laid the wood in order. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to kill his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. And he said, Here I am. He said, Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, for me. And Abraham looked up, and he saw a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, The Lord Will Provide. As it is said to this day, on the mount of the Lord, it shall be provided. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, to understand what's happening here, we need a little more background to this text. The story of Abraham goes way back to Genesis 12, when God first comes to Abraham, when Abraham is 75 years old. And he tells Abraham at that time that through him all the families of the earth shall be blessed. However, that was many, many years ago, some 40 plus years ago. So by the time that we pick up Abraham in our text today or tonight, he is close to 120 years old. Now, most people at that age are known to be in the sunset years of their life. people Abraham's age are either in a retirement home or they're vacationing in Michigan in the summer and off to Florida in the winter. But that's not the case for Abraham because he has an adolescent son still in his home by the name of Isaac. And this is the son that God promised Abraham years ago, so now that every time that Abraham looks at his son Isaac, he's reminded of God's trustworthiness. However, the many years leading up to Isaac's birth were not all that easy for Abraham. Abraham has been on a continuous spiritual journey with God, where each step of the way, it seems that God is testing or challenging Abraham to the point to know how far will Abraham trust God. When my kids were growing up, we loved to watch Disney movies. We had all the Disney classics. And one of their favorites, or they would probably say one of my favorite Disney movie was the movie Aladdin. You guys, yeah, you're there. Do you remember it? Do you remember the theme song? Can we get there? Here we go. Work with me. I can show shining, shimmering. Tell me, princess. I can open your eyes, take me wonder by wonder, open sideways, magic carpet ride,
big finish,
a whole new world, point of view, no one to tell us no, or where to go. They're only three. Keep going. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Uh-oh. Oh, no. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, what a great flick, wasn't it? Okay. Now, I know you guys all saw it because you're singing it. Now, hold it. Hey, come back with me. Come back. Do you remember the part when Aladdin first met Princess Jasmine? You remember that? And they're kind of eyeing each other. And then all of a sudden, what happens? The henchman of the evil wizard, Jafar. Okay, he's a genie. Give me a break. Wizard, genie, okay. I got to be accurate here. Okay, the genie. So anyway, hey, work with me. So they're after him, and guess what? They're running on the rooftops of the city. Remember this? Are you with me? Okay, and they come to a point. Hey, they come to a point. It looks like they hit a dead end, right? And that they're trapped. And the henchmen get closer and closer. And Aladdin looks at Princess Jasmine. What does he do? Hey, let me get to the point. He reaches. Come on. I love it. You're going to preach the sermon. He reaches out his hand to her, and he says,
Do you trust me?
And she pauses, doesn't she? Oh. She pauses just for a moment, looks at the henchman coming forward, then back to Aladdin. And he says again, do you trust me? And what does she do? Grabs his hand. They jump to safety and freedom. It was beautiful. It makes me want to weep right now, but I'm not going to. They jump to freedom, don't they? The story of Abraham is all about trust. Throughout Abraham's life, God seems to be continually reaching out his hand to Abraham and saying to him, do you trust me? And this is no Hollywood kind of nickel dime kind of trust. It's a hard and it's a risky and it's a real life trusting in God. And up to this point, when we get up to our text, up to this point, Abraham, just like Princess Jasmine, has trusted. But God is about to give Abraham the ultimate trust test by asking him to sacrifice his son Isaac. Listen again to the opening verses of our text. After these things, God tested Abraham. And he said to Abraham, Abraham. And Abraham replied back, here I am. And he said, take your son, now listen to this, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I will show you. What do you think Abraham has to be thinking? He's got to be thinking, what kind of request is this? Because this is a test about life or death, and not just anybody holds life or death. This is his one son, his only son, whom he loved, Isaac. However, as God speaks these words to Abraham, Abraham recognizes a phrase that he has only heard one other time in his life. At least that's what the scripture tells us. In the Hebrew, the phrase is lacha, which means go to the land. And these were some of the very first words that God spoke to Abraham some 40 plus years ago when Abraham was first encountered by God in Haran. Back then, God was asking Abraham to give up his past, but now God is asking Abraham to give up his future in his son Isaac. A few years ago, I read a book by Brendan Manning entitled Ruthless Trust. Manning describes this kind of trust as a heroic courage to trust in the love of God no matter what happens to us. And this is the kind of trust that Abraham's going to need if he's going to be able to obey God. You see, the test of Abraham's faith, as well as our faith, always comes down to this one basic question. Do we really trust God?
Do we really trust God? Another way to say this is, do we believe God, or do we merely believe in God? Indeed, this is a story of trust and faith, and one, as Paul said, doesn't simply stand alone, but has a backstory. Anytime a story starts out with after these things, we're wise to look back to see what these things are. And we see throughout Abraham's life that it is a story of a person of faith. However, it's interesting that only once in the narrative does the faith word believe appear. Hebrew has the same root word, aman, that is used both for the noun faith and the verb believe. And we find the verb back in Genesis 15, which, if you remember, is a story where God again is giving the covenant to Abraham. And it says that Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned to him as righteousness. And though this is the only time the word believe is used, we see through Abraham's life that the running theme is in his actions. When God tells him to go, he goes. We first see this in Genesis 12. God says, go. So Abraham went. But this is just the first of many times. We hear this litany. Abraham was a leaver, leaving Ur and Haran, leaving Shechem and Bethel, leaving Egypt and Gerar, leaving Beersheba. And each time Abraham went and obeyed, his trust, his ability to believe God increased. And his understanding that living into a life of faith deepened. And we must remember that to leave in the Hebrew culture was a gargantuan leap of faith. It was a culture where land and place were intimately connected with identity, safety, and legacy. Now, if we learned anything about the book of Genesis this semester, it's that it is primarily a book about God, and secondarily a book about human beings encountering God. So yeah, while it's a story about trust, it's also a story about the character of God, which at first glance is quite problematic for many reasons. And even after a more in-depth look, it's still somewhat troubling and unnerving. For what kind of God would ask one to sacrifice his only son? The very son that God promised in the first place. The very son that was tangible evidence that God is to be believed, to be trusted, that nothing, not even birth after decades of barrenness, is too wonderful for the Lord. So what do we learn of this God, the one for whom nothing is too wonderful? We learn that God tests even the faithful, that testing and then ultimately sacrifice are a part of this life of faith that we are trying to live. God tests. Now, to fully understand God's testing, we need to take into account God's perspective of the world. God has been repeatedly burned by human sin. We see betrayal in the first generation, murder in the second, and the generations that follow are so corrupt and evil that God decides to start anew, afresh, by flooding them out. But God still finds himself in risky waters after the flood. And we see this in the Tower of Babel, where people again are alienating themselves from God. And then we have this call of Abraham, which reveals a new plan, a new covenant, that through one, many generations may be blessed. Abraham is blessed to be a blessing. And the testing of this one, Abraham, on whom the future of all generations, all of God's people is being staked, begins immediately, as we've pointed out, with the command, go to the land I will show you. And throughout his 100-plus years of life, there are tests along the way. Some he passes through more easily than others. Do these tests reveal us something about God or about Abraham and his character? Definitely. But they also reveal to us something about God. That God is vulnerable in the context of covenantal relationship. As biblical scholar and theologian Ellen Davis puts it, listen to this, we're more comfortable using the omni words, omnipotent, omniscient, to describe God. Yet if we properly understand the dynamics of covenant relationship, then we are confronted with a God who is vulnerable. For as both testaments, Old and New, maintain, the covenant with God is fundamentally an unbreakable bond of love. An ordinary experience, our lives, teach us that love and vulnerability are incredibly linked. We are most vulnerable to emotional pain when the well-being and faithfulness of those we love are at stake. Betrayal cuts the deepest from those we love and trust. And as we've seen, the biblical narrative shows us that the faithfulness, even amongst God's chosen, is always up for grabs. So it follows that God's vulnerability in love is an essential element of the relationship. The story of the binding of Isaac is one that challenges definitely our cognitive understanding of God, and one that strikes at the core of our emotions. The text itself, however, is quite void of emotion speak, which leaves plenty of room for us to creatively imagine and wonder what they're feeling. And being humans ourselves, we're quick to imagine and wonder, what is Abraham thinking? Or what is Isaac thinking? And interestingly, if we look at the text, the bit of emotion that peeks through is a sense of God's relief. When at the last moment, God bursts forth calling, Abraham, Abraham, do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him. For now I know you fear God since you've not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And this is where God's vulnerability peeks through. For now I know. Now, understanding a bit more of the character of God, we're now faced with the question of us as we encounter this text. And the question that we must wrestle with on our own is, what are we holding on to that is keeping us from God? What do we need to let go of in order for God to say with a sigh of relief, "For now I know that you fear me"? I know from conversations with many of you and from my own life that the answer to this question is wide and varied. But for most of us, the answer has something to do with our persistent attempt to be in control. In our quest to control something in our lives, we find ourselves demanding in our relationships with others, trying to make people fit into our lives or behave how we want them to behave. Some find control in what we eat or don't eat, often masking a deep-seated need of acceptance with excessively working out or obsessing over appearance. Perhaps some of us are holding on to an image that we or others have created, and we'll do anything to keep that image intact, pretending to be what we think others want us to be, whatever the cost to our health. Some of us are holding on to unhealthy patterns in our relationships and our social lives because we can't imagine a life where our identity does not rest in who we're seen with. Some are holding on to dreams that need to die, dreams of getting into the perfect graduate program or receiving the perfect job, at whatever the cost to our well-being. Not being able to imagine what life would be like with an identity that's not wrapped up in what you do or how much money you make. Some of us need to let go of trying to find the perfect partner now, trusting that perhaps what seems perfect now might not be perfect in 5, 10, or 20 years. Whereas others need to let go of our autonomy and trust that commitment often brings freedom. You see, somewhere along the line, we realize that we are not in control of our lives. And at every point in our life, we need to ask ourselves, does God serve us, or do we serve God? Having faith is not something we get once and check off our to-do list, but it's living into our salvation here and now. And to do this, we need a continual assessment of what's holding us back in this life. This is hard, for as we see early on in the biblical narrative, this is a life that does demand sacrifice. And sacrifice, as one author puts it, is a readiness to interrupt whatever we are doing and build an altar, bind whatever we happen to be carrying with us at the moment, place it on the altar, and see what God wills to do with it.
And so Abraham was on a journey. And each one of us here in this room tonight is also on a journey with God. And we're all at different places on the journey. But just as Abraham's life was a life of testing, God reaching out his hand to Abraham at different points and asking the question, "Do you trust me?" And so tonight, replace Abraham's name with your name. And imagine God reaching out his hand and asking you, "Do you trust me with this situation?" Whatever situation it is for you. So for the next few minutes, we're going to respond to God's word by just sitting quietly before the Lord, asking him, "Lord, what in my life do I need to trust you with? We're going to let the strings play for a few moments. So just for a few moments, close your eyes and imagine the Lord reaching out to you and asking you, do you trust me?